Blog Talk Radio.
The Pavilion Podcast.
Yellow Beast, holla at me.
The Pavilion Podcast. Welcome to the Pavilion Podcast, Tyler Tyne and Ryan Sackerman this week. So on the first edition of the podcast, we really need to discuss what the hell happened at Seton Hall. The first loss for Villanova this season, and what would have been the longest, Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, the first time in program history they started 14-0. Is that right?
That is correct.
First time they would have started 14-0 in program history, and they fall to Seton Hall. Ryan, at least from your perspective, we know you're a big Seton Hall fan, even though you love Villanova at the same time. What did you see?
Yeah.
What did you see against Seton Hall?
I think it's pretty hard to look at this game and not look at free throws. Seton Hall went out to a quick 17-3 lead, and I really think that put the team away early. And in that time, they started off like 45% from the free throw line. And that stadium was loud. I mean, it used to be where the Nets play. It's a big arena, holds a lot of people. And, you know, if you get all, like, you know, Seton Hall's coming off a win against ranked St. John's at home. You got Villanova coming in and they're hyped. When I really felt bad is right in the beginning when they do their intro video, you know, they show the Gibbs shot from last year's Big East tournament, and the crowd got hyped after that, and I thought, all right, this place is fired up. And you get off to a quick, you know, 17-3 lead, and it was 8-0 or something like that, break, call a quick timeout, you think, oh, man, this isn't how you want to start. And then, yeah, you mean you miss all your free throws in the beginning, all of a sudden that quick lead stays there throughout the first half. And, you know, going into the half, they actually took a lead outside the half, but, again, those free throws continue to struggle, and you know, you're always trying to catch up. You're never really trying to set the tone. You're always trying to just get even. Secondly, you have to look at you put aside a check for this team was just a disaster. I mean, no one shot above 50%. You got Hilliard 4-for-9. Everyone else, you got Hart 3-for-13. Booth only played 12 minutes. Arch 1-for-9. Kingston 1-for-7. I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's point out something that could go wrong, and it did in that case. And they still forced overtime, which is a miracle.
It really was, and you have to give a lot of credit to the Seton Hall team, not just the team, but the coaching staff, Kevin Willard, you know, and everybody else they brought over with that Isaiah Whitehead train. This may be the second, third time consecutively that Seton Hall has prepared well for Villanova. Not just the Sterling, you know, step-back jumper, but maybe the game earlier in the season at the Rock, I think it was a closer margin than one of the closer games, one of the more talked-about games before all those Creighton upsets last year. Seton Hall has always played Villanova very, very well, and it's really underrated how good this backcourt is. Sterling Gibbs might be the best guard in the Big East. And if you don't know much about Kadeem Carrington, Kadeem Carrington is one of the better guards in his area coming out of high school. So it's very undervalued how good the backcourt is. And then you take all that into account and you don't bring in Isaiah Whitehead. There is no Isaiah Whitehead, you know, a five-star player to add to this area. So you're really bringing what Seton Hall has done in 1 year, bring the best talent from the Brooklyn, the New York, the Manhattan area, and put it in northern New Jersey. You take all of that and they guard Villanova very well. Villanova probably had their worst first half of their entire season, not counting the NJIT game, not counting the Bucknell start, not counting any of those other times, the 6 or 7 times that they shot over 22 threes this season.
Yeah.
It's the fact that Villanova just collectively played poorly. And there's going to be so much conversation of, okay, this can only happen one time, so only happen one time. You can't shoot this poorly one time. You can't shoot 57% from the line one time, you know. It'll only happen one time. But the thing is, if you don't do anything to stop this, if you don't do any coaching, any teaching, any something to really nip this in the butt, we don't know what happens when they play St. John's. Because when you play St. John's and you've got Chris Obekpa, who's a great rebounding forward and probably the best shot blocker in the NCAA. On top of that, you might have one of the best scoring guards in the NCAA, D'Angelo Harrison. So the question is, you couldn't stop a young forward. you couldn't stop a young guy in Desi Rodriguez, not Desi Rodriguez, excuse me, you couldn't stop a young guy in, losing his name right now, a young forward who's a great, not Gibbs, the forward who did so much. I know it was Desi Rodriguez.
Probably Delgado.
You couldn't even do much to stop Desi Rodriguez. So if you think a freshman forward, what do you do against an experienced guy like Chris Oakford?
Yeah, that's the big question. You look at St. John's, and you kind of see a lot of similarities between them and Villanova. You look at their forwards for St. John's. You got Obekpa and Pointer. You know, one of those people gets into some foul trouble. You don't really have anyone to fall back on. For Villanova, look at Achefu Pinkston. You say, let's suppose Achefu gets two quick fouls, something we know he's capable of doing. I don't think you can rely on Chris Jenkins to have some post play for an extended period of time. I don't think he's conditioned for that. And, I mean, I just don't think Dallas Reynolds has had enough court time to really have any experience for that, too. I don't think he can play an extended time either. So if one of those teams really gets into that position, I really think this game might be over pretty quickly.
So immediately the question kind of has to be for Villanova is how do you rebound? We've seen so many of the games this season where they were able to pull away. They were able, and a lot of the fan base will call that heart, they were able to pull away. And whatever you really classify it as, the point is that Villanova won. Whether it was a weak showing, whether it was heart, whether a plethora of different answers that you would have for that, they won. This is the first time Villanova has played poorly and they lost. So, obviously, their shooting numbers are anomalies. 31% from the field, 20% from three. Well, that's not too much of an anomaly because they've done that in half of their games this season. So that's not an anomaly anymore. That's a thing. Villanova just shoots poorly from three, one out of two games in the season. They're too reliant on the three ball. They shot more than 20 shots from deep in seven games this year. They're too reliant on the three ball. You can't take 24 jumpers from deep. After a while, you need to find some inside-outside motion. And the problem I have is that in overtime, Achefu didn't get one touch. How do you expect to beat this Seton Hall team when your best player, literally 90% of your offense at that point, is 19 and 24 with 8 offensive rebounds and has only missed 2 shots in the game? Granted, he missed 5 free throws, but he's only missed 2 shots in the game. How do you not go to him? Instead, you go to Ryan Archer-Jackino, who played the most minutes of anybody on the roster in this game, who might have been the worst player in this game, and he had 2 turnovers in the last minute and 30 seconds that gave Seton Hall their extra opportunities. It seems like there was no game plan for overtime. He did a great job opening up that last shot for Darren Hilliard at the buzzer, but there seems like there wasn't a good enough game plan for overtime.
Yeah, I got to agree with you with the overtime thing. I don't think Achefu got the ball once. I don't think that's an exaggeration. I don't think he got a shot attempt in overtime. It was just crazy. That's how they got to overtime. I mean, Seton Hall was up by more than one possession in this head late in the second half. And they kept going to Chapel with his hook shot, kept going in. He was like pounding his chest. You're like, all right, we might be able to outlast this. And then all of a sudden you get to overtime and then you're like, I don't know. I feel like he just took it as, okay, it is a brand new game. Whatever what happened is in the past, but it wasn't. I mean, the same things occurred. When Hilliard fouled out, I knew this wasn't gonna be good because he was the one that really. I mean, that's how they got to a quick 6-point lead in the second half. And when he fouled out, I realized that there's no way. Like, I don't know if anyone else on this team, any other guard, had the capability of carrying the team at that point because, as you saw, everyone else was shooting under 25%. So I think you really got to look to that. So, okay, one of our best guards is out of the game. Let's go inside more. I mean, Delgado finished with, I think it was 4 fouls. Mobley ended up fouling out, but you get Delgado out of the game. I mean, that's huge, especially in overtime. And I don't think they forced Delgado to make enough free throws. The only 2 he took was on when Hart, the Damakong, sued him. And, I mean, Angel Delgado is like a 36% free throw shooter. There's no way he should have been able to. He only put 3 shots, but I really think they should have given him more of an issue because we were struggling from the free throw line. We only had to make them struggle from the free throw line, and you know what? They don't get out to a big enough lead.
And it was Angel Delgado who was Mrs. Rodriguez that I said earlier. But I guess we kind of need to look at it from a different angle now. Now Villanova's 13-1, which isn't really an aberration by any means. When you look at how much
Absolutely.
Pressure this fan base puts on this team, it's almost as if they committed a cardinal sin by losing one game because it's as if Seton Hall has never been good enough. Whereas you look at the rankings this week, Seton Hall knocks off Villanova, they're immediately top 25 ranked. They were a top 30, top 35 team all season long. So they've been good. Seton Hall's been good. So the thing now is that I think the conversation surrounding Villanova being a Final Four potential team was a little bit overrated, especially seeing as the last year they couldn't make it to the Sweet 16. So the thing now is that what is Villanova's real ceiling? Because for me, their potential, their ceiling right now after losing to Seton Hall at this very moment is Sweet 16. That's as far as I can see them going, is Sweet 16. Without two proper big men, without much depth in the front court, and with guards who are going to get beat by literally above average point guards, above average scoring guards. To me, it's Sweet 16. Ryan, what is it for you?
Before I answer that, I just want to say this question's a little different this year because if you do say they can win the championship, I think we have to remember that team in Kentucky, I really don't see them being taken down. So this one, you can't just be overconfident.
Yeah, exactly. Agreeing with you. Remember, not even the team in Kentucky,
yeah.
The team in Louisville, the team in Wisconsin. Man, the team in North Jersey can't even get past that at this moment. So a national championship conversation shouldn't even be in the realm of reality right now until Villanova can get past St. John's. Let's revisit national championship when we get past St. John's. When we can move past that game, let's do that. When we can move past Georgetown, let's do that. When they can go to the finals of a Big East tournament championship, let's do that. But right now, until really around the end of February, national championship conversations are so premature with the Villanova roster that is
Absolutely.
Very black and white. If a team like Seton Hall can properly prepare for them three straight times and win two of those three times, then who knows what happens when they play, UConn in the second round last year. Or when you play a team, I mean, they did well with VCU, they did well with Michigan, even though we know now that Michigan isn't as great as we thought they would be this season. The thing is, when you get another one of these top 30, top 25 teams, how many teams can Villanova beat and how many teams can't they? Because who on paper do they really match up with well? That's the question now, not national championship, not Final Four, not getting ahead of ourselves. Realistically, who can and who can't they beat? Once we become realistic with this team, be as hard to stomach some of these losses to what I guess will be assumed lesser teams if they do happen. Like, Villanova shouldn't be losing to Xavier or DePaul or teams like that, but Georgetown, St. John, Seton Hall, those might be actual conversation starters.
Yeah, I'm still looking for that true road win, too. You can say what you want about the foul. I don't really consider that a road win yet. You go into Tuesday, and they've had some success at Madison Square Garden this year, and they're 3-0.
They have.
So if they win there, I think that'll be a big confidence boost, just knowing, all right, the Seton Hall win was just an aberration. We're back on track. No matter how they perform in that game, I think it's good to just, if you win that, you realize, okay, we're back where we were. We can focus now. You come back. You got DePaul coming up. Xavier should be two easy wins. I think if you get 3-0 in the next three games, I think this team can really right themselves going into February and then right into March.
And I really, really agree. It's not that Villanova is a bad team. They're not a bad team. Villanova is consistently a top 15 team in the country, and I think they do deserve to be there. The question, though, is that when you know, you bring up all these hypotheticals about the roster that you kind of root for, and you say to yourself, what you should say to yourself, is who can this team beat in the top 15? Who can this team beat in the top 15? Not just in November, not just in December, not just in January, but in March, late February, who can this team beat in the top 15? And if you can easily, confidently say that most of that top 15 will go down to that roster, you've got a damn good roster. But if there are questions, it becomes rationalization and generalization, well, it's as good as mine. But
yeah, you'll get a top
Pavilion podcast, man. We only got 10 seconds here. Pavilion podcast, episode 1. We got to do this again, Ryan.
Definitely. Had a lot of fun. Hope it goes well for the rest of the year.